The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Jack Rifkin is here. He's my guest host today, Altegris Investments, where he is Chief Investment Officer. But also on the board of Idealab, has traveled many times to India looking for, in particular, clean tech, but all kinds of tech startup investments. First time on the show, very happy to have him here, Nicholas Smithy. He is the Chief Investment Strategist at Emerging Global Advisors, bringing so much expertise on these elections and what to expect. Nick, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
So first, talk to us a little bit about Mr. Modi, who he is and why he is potentially so important in India. He's not a newcomer. He has a long track record already.
Mr. Modi is the governor of Gujarat State, where he has had a very successful track record of accelerating growth through inviting investment and getting the labor force to work. Foreign companies have wanted to set up there, and it is a model for the rest of India if the country is willing to follow the path of reforms that will eventually accelerate growth back towards the 10% rate that India needs to alleviate unemployment and poverty.
Why would the rest of the country not want to jump right on this train?
I think that the rest of the country has shown that it does want to jump on this train. Mr. Modi has been elected with a 61% majority. This is the largest majority we've seen in a generation. The last time we've seen such a large swing in favor of one party was in 1984. So I think that the results show that the nation is very eager to accept change.
This was a 61% majority of those elected. Right, or representing the party.
Right.
It was not a majority of the actual vote, although it was a lot. 550 million people voted.
This amazing. Is amazing. It took weeks to get it all done.
It takes weeks to run elections in India, that's right.
So what, as an investor, Nick, and of course that's where you weigh in, emerging market advisors, you specialize in emerging markets around the world. We've had Martin Hoekstra on, the founder and head of the company before. Specifically with India, from an investment standpoint, is this a time to get in? Jack Rifkin kind of stopped looking for investment opportunities in India because of the lack of infrastructure development, because of all the obstacles that still exist. What is it? It's more than 20 years since the early 90s. Open up India. India was going to be competing with China, the next miracle of Asia.
That's right. India really has recovered more than investors would have thought this year on the back of the idea that Mr. Modi would be elected and would be able to enact reforms. And I think that the investment opportunity in India now is not really the broad market as such, which contains a large number of outsourcers in IT, pharmaceutical companies, and large consumer companies. The point is more to rotate towards cyclicals, industrials, and infrastructure. These are the parts of the economy that Mr. Modi has explicitly targeted for improvement and reform. And therefore, I think that investors should be looking at the economically sensitive parts of the market, the small cap areas, industrials, energy. And as I said, the biggest theme of all is probably infrastructure.
What do you expect, Nick, would be the first actions that he will take once he is actually in office?
I think that he's got three main tasks. He has to cut the budget deficit, he has to encourage investment, and he has to improve infrastructure. He'll have to appoint a cabinet. He'll have to work with local governments in order to be able to get the reforms through that he needs.
Why can we be more hopeful now that these reforms will be made? Is it because now that it is, what, more than 20 years since the opening of India, the big changes in the early 90s, that there's a generation, a younger generation, who grew up in this changed world, who is going to be more behind this, more pushing for this, more needing this?
Yes, I think that the fact that the economic growth rate has fallen to its lowest level in a decade, at really only around 5%. The existence of high inflation, that really amounts to a stagflationary economy. There's poor infrastructure, there's voter dissatisfaction, there's a lack of job creation, and I think that the population has made its sentiments felt with the overwhelming majority that they've given the BJP, and perhaps a good parallel to draw might be towards, say, Margaret Thatcher or Ronald Reagan in the early 80s, where the population has finally said that they want to change for the better.
Well, they have said they want to change for the better. I wonder if a lot of this is already reflected, at least in the markets themselves. I was clearly wrong on what happened in India last year. I expected to be a much more populist approach by the Congress Party, and it didn't happen. The change at the bank was very important. The market has done well. Can we really expect this market to continue here, or are we going to have to wait for a honeymoon period?
Apparently? Yes, the market's done very well. In local currency terms, it's at an all-time high, but it's nowhere near a high in U.S. dollar terms, which shows the extent to which the currency has depreciated since the Fed announced its tapering. The Indian market's up about 20% year to date, but we haven't made any real money for 5, 6, 7 years in India. I think that when you look at the market, the valuation of 15 to 16 times earnings is bang in line with its 5 or 10 year averages. It's no more expensive than many Asian markets. And I do think that investors will want to rotate into these economically sensitive sectors. And I think the market will probably be news flow driven rather than earnings driven in the short term, because there is no question that there has been weakness in Indian economic performance. And therefore, investors will have to look through this soft patch and anticipate higher growth and acceleration in the months and years ahead to continue to buy the economically sensitive parts of the market.
Well, Nick, we can't let you go, though, without you look at the emerging markets overall. We're talking about India. India looks like an attractive country if you get down into the weeds with that country. But as you look around the emerging markets, how would you compare India today with other emerging market opportunities?
There's a huge hunger for reforms throughout the emerging markets. Generally speaking, in the West, we find that capital dominates labor. And in the emerging markets, labor dominates capital. And the consequence of this has been populist policies that have led to inefficient economic activity, relatively poor wage growth, very low economic growth, and poor stock market performance. And I think that throughout the emerging markets, we're seeing a desire for reform. We see explicit programs for reform, not only in India, but also in Mexico, in China, possibly in Brazil, conceivably in Turkey and Indonesia. Anywhere where we see a general election coming up, we could well see a push for microeconomic reforms that will accelerate economic growth, provide higher employment, and better wages.
So, Chris, one of the things you do at Emerging Market Advisors, and I don't want this to be a commercial, nevertheless, you're here, you guys put together funds, you've had some funds with pretty good track records. If I wanted to play India, if I believe you that cyclically sensitive, that infrastructure is going to happen, that there's this appetite for reform, how are you designing funds right now? What have you guys put together that makes a play on that?
We have two or three strategies in the market for direct Indian exposure, and I think that the most beneficial would be the infrastructure fund that we have, whose ticker is INXX. That's a direct play on the improvement in infrastructure, in power, rail, roads, ports. And we have another one whose ticker, SCIN, is our small cap fund. And I think that small and mid-sized companies doing business in India, working in the parts of the economy that are being favored for reform by the BJP, should be strong beneficiaries of the new economic program.
How do you cut the budget deficit and invest in infrastructure in India?
It's very hard to do. What the government is going to try to do is to encourage foreign direct investment, which has been scared off under prior administrations on account of corruption, on account of retrospective taxes being imposed, and therefore there's been a dearth of foreign companies willing to invest in India. I think that Mr. Modi will want to show that the country is open for business.
Will he be able to very quickly pull together a cabinet, which I think could be important to make this
happen?
Yes,
the cabinet choices will be important. It'll be the first thing that he does is to assemble a business-friendly cabinet of more dynamic characters who will be able to persuade the parliamentarians of the necessity to vote for the reforms in question.
I must say, in the companies that we had involved there, we located our manufacturing in Gujarat, because it was easier, there was infrastructure there, and it was a friendly area. We had the headquarters in Bangalore because of the technology, but Gujarat is a small state. It is a case of whether this
right.
man can carry
Final
this on.
Final word to you, Nick.
There will indeed be obstacles, and no progress will be made in a straight line, but all they have to do is move in the right direction, and investors there will be rewarded.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2014, Bloomberg LP.